Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I'm Robert Winters, and he's not.
I'm not. I'm Mike Bloomberg.
No, he's not.
No, I'm Patrick Barrett. I'm just wearing my Mike Bloomberg 2020 sweatshirt. For all you big Mike Bloomberg fans watching, I know Alana Mallon is a big one. Hi, Alana. I mean, Vice Mayor Mallon.
You know, Glenn Kuchar, the originator of the real Cambridge Inside Out, before we borrowed the name, he always would make a point. The thing is, there's nothing in the charter about there being a vice mayor.
No.
There's only the vice chair of the city council.
Well.
But the thing is, by tradition, we call it the vice mayor, and that's cool.
Speaking of which, we had an election. Some people were voted
yes,
in.
Yes.
And we have a new mayor.
We do. But we most certainly do. Now, why don't you tell the folks, for those who don't know, and like as if anybody watching this
so
program
it pleases
know.
Me very much so to announce that Sumbul Siddiqui is our new mayor, and Alana Mallon is our new vice mayor. And quite frankly, I couldn't be more pleased with that result. Mark McGovern was our mayor for the past 2 years, and we will miss you, but you're still in the council, and you're also my neighbor, so to you. But Sumbul, I'm particularly pleased with, because no councillor out of the 20,000 that ran for city council last term got more crap than Sumbul. Sumbul was councillor who had to carry the water of a handful of folks who just couldn't vote one way or the other on things, and controversial issues like the courthouse or the Galleria Mall, which was the latest one, which she turned out to be a very pragmatic, reasonable human being. Much to my shock living in this city, but right. That she not only got the most votes, number one votes, she also is now the mayor. And
there's one of the things, I mean, not that the mayor is basically the chair of the city council and the chair of the school committee.
But she's all powerful, can do whatever she wants, right?
No. Nine councilors choose the city manager, and the manager is who runs the city, right? But the thing is, that's the way it really works, mm-hmm. right? But it is an honor, we do not have directly elected mayors in this city. But then again, the Boston City Council president is chosen by the other members of the city council, just like our mayor, who's essentially the president of the city council, is chosen by our city councilors.
And now the head of the school committee, which is nice.
Yeah, but it is sort of a nice thing when the sort of stars are in alignment, where every once in a while, actually not that rarely, the person who would have been elected mayor in a direct vote if we did like an instant runoff using the ballots would have been Sumbul Siddiqui.
Yep.
So from a popularity point of view, I think this is very consistent with what the voters probably would have wanted.
Yeah, and I actually think it's a grand thing, not just actually really just because I like Sumbul, and I actually really like Alana too. They make a great team. They have a podcast together. It's called The Women Are Here. And Alana has been a huge booster for Central Square, and Sumbul has too. And I only recognize Central Square as Cambridge, so the rest of the city can do what they want to do. It's been super.
He doesn't actually believe that.
No, I don't. Right. But as people in Harvard Square who I've spent way too much time with recently will tell you, I do like to make fun of them consistently, and will do so forever. But having Alana and Sumbul up there, I think, two people who know how to work together well, it bodes well for maybe a more collaborative council than we've seen in the past.
I'm sure I will agree and disagree with all sorts of various proposals that people come up with or initiatives that they push.
I think I'm likely to disagree more.
maybe so. But the thing is that I'm sort of at least hoping that things will be a little more compromise oriented. Mm-hmm. Where people actually spend more time listening rather than dictating terms.
Well, we spent the last year, wrestling over the affordable housing overlay. And that led to a big nothing sandwich. But divisiveness, ugliness, your classic Cambridge bashes, which quite frankly, after being here for, oh my God, like 16 years now, I'm so tired of watching...
Newcomer.
But I'm watching this like progressive ballet of like tit for tat on like minutia issues that you guys all kind of agree on, but you don't, and then you want to fight. I'm so sick of watching that. It is like boring.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that there is a There probably, I think last time we were on the program, I was talking about in zoning, you know, finding kind of a sweet spot between, you know, too dense, not too dense, whatever, something that everybody can live with. I kind of think that that's generally the way it can work with a lot of things.
I think I'm discovering the sweet spot is actually putting a conservative between a bunch of groups and having them sort of map it out between the two. Because I having watched the battles again and again and again, like I just don't. I honestly had a conspiracy theory thinking that honestly that the battle itself was what, you know, the man wanted, and that everyone sort of just was like wrestling and fighting to get nowhere, which was the goal.
See, I have a point of view too, which is it's sort of the problem with progressives that I have. Not that I'm against being progressive. It's just that...
You're going to have to tell me what that means, too.
Well, the thing is I once wrote an essay called In Search of a Progressive Definition, which is because I always think it's the word people love to use, but nobody ever is willing to define.
I bet you if we went to Texas, people would think we're communists.
Probably so, yeah. But the one thing about a lot of the so-called progressives that I really have a bit of an issue with, honestly, is that they're very elitist. They say, I know the way things should be. And I'm simply going to just push it down.
Whatever are you talking about?
Yeah, and rather than actually sitting back and listening to and trying to find some sort of common ground amongst many people, not all of whom are going to necessarily be in agreement with you.
Well, a good immediate example that came to mind, I got a flash in my email from on a listserv that will remain nameless, from someone who like was asking to create some kind of political rally, and like the headline was like, I know we all agree on these things, and we all believe the same thing, so let's have the rally over here for the XYZ.
Right.
And I was reading going, wow, that must be such a cozy, cozy feeling to make yourself believe, because that is not true.
It's actually an incredibly aggressive thing to use a phrase like that, to say, well, we all believe this, because if you don't, you're actually intimidated to speak up to say that you disagree.
Well, yeah. I mean, and like, I wonder, like, what the ramp... Because it's never, like, right or wrong, or, like, you have a bad idea or a good idea. It's like, you're a bad person. Or, like, you're evil.
Right.
Or, like, you're... part of the reason why society is failing.
And we all agree that you're...
We all got together last night and decided you...
Yeah, that's it. That's
terrible.
So anyway, let's just do the quick rundown of what the full story of what happened yesterday. So it was Inauguration Day, and you always get your sort of souvenir pamphlet when you go to the City Council Inauguration. Pauline Carter-Wells from the Cambridge Police Department, who has the voice of an angel.
Yes, yes.
You know, he sang multiple pieces, including for the third inauguration straight, John Lennon's Imagine, which a little mild change in the wording, right, where it changed men to women, I think in recognition of the fact that we just had elected women as mayor and vice mayor.
Yeah.
But it was pretty nice, actually.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't go to the big banquet thing they do afterwards, but I did for the school committee later that day.
I didn't go to either because I had to work.
Well, there you go. Anyway, so that was at 10 a.m. And then at 4 p.m. they had the inauguration of the Cambridge School Committee.
Oh yeah,
right. Not a whole lot to say, honestly. They're kind of more of an amateurish.
It's a quiet group. Never any controversy comes out of them.
Oh yeah. Actually, you know, again, I don't want to go there. I would say, you know, there are 6 people were elected. Only 5 people took the oath. And it's interesting to me how in the program there's absolutely no reference to the fact that there were 6 people elected. There were only the statements of the 5 who were taking the oath. It was sort of like there's like this erasure process.
It's very Monty Python-esque, sort of bury your head in the sand kind of approach.
Yeah, well, we live in cancel culture now.
So, I absolutely hate cancel culture.
I absolutely.
And like, it's not just because I'm a weird, angry white guy, but like, you know, listen to like a comedian like Dave Chappelle talk about cancel culture, and like everything you need to know how I feel about that is in his Netflix special.
There, absolutely.
It's just like through and through.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, they don't actually take on any other business other than provisionally adopt the rules of the previous city council, subject to possible revision, whatever. Once the mayor is selected, and then someone was elected mayor, along was elected vice mayor.
Unanimously,
right?
And swiftly, no tit for tat.
Oh, yeah. So it was all decided in advance. I guess I sort of knew the Sumble.
I feel like the whole city knew like 2 months ago.
You know, I don't, you know, the interesting thing is every year, every 2 years, there's always all the chatter. Who do you think is going to be mayor? Mm-hmm. I actually didn't even hear that much chatter about it this time.
All I heard was Sumble is going to be mayor like the day after the
election. Well, actually, the way I heard was if she wants it.
If she wants it, but I don't know. To me, it all felt so right. Like I thought Alana and Sumble were going to get it from the day that they won the election. Nothing made me think otherwise. You know, I think McGovern probably had a chance to retain it for a second term. But I think he actually did the right thing and was pretty noble about it in passing the torch.
Wait a minute. Now I'm going to dispute this.
Oh, good.
No, because it's nice to sort of, you know, claim some sort of authority, moral authority. Like, it is I who have pass the torch, but that's not how it works.
I know that's not how it works.
It's not how it works at all. I mean, the thing is, the five votes were probably there, and it wasn't there for him.
My God,
and at that point, you say, well, all like, I have decided to, you know, just to pass the torch and to not seek reelection. Like, no.
I bet you he had some votes there, but I think
he can have some votes.
It's not how it works. I agree, but I think, I think he really liked being mayor. That was pretty obvious. And I think he was a good mayor, but I think he also thought he had a good chance of getting mayorship again. So maybe it was a way for him to
have a lot of people who serve as mayor feel that way on the way out, mm-hmm. but rarely are there repeats.
Does that mean he gets his picture painted on the wall in the Southern Chamber? How do you get one of those?
Eventually.
Okay, eventually it happens.
Yeah.
All mayors get that?
That's sort of becoming the tradition.
Okay.
Yeah.
How it used to be?
When they named the Sullivan Chamber the Sullivan Chamber, they made sure they had pictures of Sullivan, right? You know, so that was all there. You know, and there was also, I think when Sheila Russell was mayor, there were a lot of former mayor portraits were like in a closet in the mayor's office.
I see.
And I think she's the one who, during her administration, they sort of brought them out and started putting them back on display.
So what I'm hearing
some of them were in the council chamber all along, like I think Al Vellucci. But it's become sort of like standard.
So what I'm hearing is get a portrait painted of myself, put it in a closet. Someone will take it out of the closet and hang it on the wall in the Sullivan Chamber, and bam, I was mayor.
You don't have to get a lot of money. That's true. That's right. It's
right. Well, you don't want to go through the process of being a mayor and elected. You just want your picture on the wall.
Right. So anyway, so that's the only formal business they did. The first real meeting would be next week.
Yep.
Of the city council, and then they take a week off for the holiday, and then they'll be back. One of the primary roles of the mayor is to do the appointments of the various city council subcommittees. Typically, what we used to have a lot more subcommittees. I think we're down to about seven. They consolidated a lot of them. It's actually technically part of the rules. So if the mayor appoints an ad hoc committee to review the rules of the council, that might involve, you know, taking a look at this committee structures and modifying those a little bit too. So,
well, we know for certain that there'll be a shakeup.
I think they should split them actually a little bit.
Personally. Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, there's the neighborhood. There's a committee for neighborhood and long-term planning, arts and celebration committee, and anything else under the sun committee.
Right.
And you know, maybe they ought to split it a little bit. You know.
No, it's like the Bureau of Tobacco, Firearms, and Alcohol. But, yeah.
Right. Anyway, so that's part of, you know, the process. Hopefully that the appointments happen in relatively quickly so that the business of the council can actually proceed.
And what business do you think we can expect?
Well, there actually are some zoning petitions that are before the council. Ooh. And then there'll be some other sort of big things coming up too. But one thing that I don't even know if all the councilors understand these rules, but the thing is that the council can meet as the ordinance committee because it's a committee of the whole. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is just make it, get three or four of them to sign on and say, we would like to meet as the ordinance committee. So even if the ordinance committee and its chairs are not yet appointed, you can still meet and deal with ordinance matters. You know,
which is fortunate because I need that particular committee because I have business before the council.
That's right. You've got one pending. It's true.
I'm not sure what the makeup of the committees will be, though obviously we'll be missing one person on the ordinance committee, and that's Craig Kelly.
Right.
Wherever you are, we love you and hope you are well. So we'll have at least one new appointee, and maybe Carlone stays on or does not stay on. We don't know.
Maybe so. You know, we'll see. But anyway, they'll, and you know, we got the, we have two new folks, you know, Patty Nolan and Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler. You know, I don't know what their preferences are, and you know, and there are probably some people who are on certainly on certain committees now who probably say, I don't want to be on that one anymore. That's a drag.
Well, I think if you are strategic, I think that if you know things, something like our city manager's contract's coming up next year, government affairs committee seems like a pretty important one.
I think that you know, in terms of like what should we anticipate to be some of the big topics that will come up relatively quickly or within half a year.
Yep.
And I think the big one, again, I don't know that anybody else talking about this, but I'm certainly talking about it, is the city manager's contract, which expires in January of 2021.
I mean, it's kind of like Fight Club, you're not supposed to talk about it, but...
Yeah, I think it's actually 1 year from today.
Whatever happens, it seems, is like we don't talk, we always whisper about it, and then we don't talk about it until like, bam, it's like, to take place.
It's the single most important vote that the city council ever takes, is the selection of a city manager, but they don't have to take that vote very often, because typically they're like multi-year contracts with a city manager. But the thing is that if they intend to extend the contract, they have to let the current city manager know by, I believe it's a date in September. Mm-hmm. And I guess along with that is also if they don't intend to, they have to probably then let him know by then as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think we have a kind of a long-term trend that's been happening where we have the sort of the leftward swing of the council.
How can you tell? Leftward swing, really? They all seem pretty...
Well, you know, the thing is part of that, even though it's not strictly logical, but the thing is because honestly, if... I guess there is a difference between liberalism and radicalism, right? The thing is that I would say the city administration is liberal through and through and through. They support and fund every imaginable project and whatever, and city council says we really would love to... push this, the city manager typically finds a way to support it. So I'd have to say the city administration is as liberal as it gets. But maybe not as radical as it could be.
Yeah, right? Well, radical, I mean...
Right? Anyway. You know, and sometimes also who is selected as city manager is sometimes done for symbolic effect. So, for example, if somebody feels, and I think this is a fundamentally invalid way of looking at the world, but... You know, if Bob Healy, his assistant, was Richie Rossi, and then Richie became city manager, and Louis was in the administration as the finance director, and then when Richie leaves, then Louis steps up right now. Mm. You know, there's a certain argument they would say that, well, if Louis were not to continue by his own choice or otherwise, that somebody else within the administration would step up and do that. But sort of the radical view is to say, no, we've got to... throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have to do something really, really wrenching and symbolic and otherwise.
It's a very political thing to sort of put out there that the city isn't working or in that there's some administrative or plan E form of government-esque issue that is preventing us from reaching that higher plateau of, you know, municipal perfection. It's total bullshit. And it's...
I agree.
It's just, and it really is a political toy. What winds up happening is, and I think, you know, every city manager has their style. I think the last two city managers hated my guts openly. Louis seemed to not as much, which is nice. But, you know, I think for them more so than ever, we have a city manager who at least is willing to listen. Louis has done an impeccable job working with me and Michael Monesteam in Central Square. Yes. We've been grateful for that support. But way more so than previous administrations. So, like, I think, if anything, you know, the complaints that come out of the council really are a reflection of their own inability to do what it is they think needs to be done or to get enough people to believe in the thing that they need to get done. It's always the radical, I guess you want to say, advocate who says, you know, we should have all of these things, but the only reason why I can't do it is these eight other people right here and that city manager.
Right.
You get rid of those guys, then, well, perfection.
Right.
I think that's like almost like a snake oil salesman way of politicking.
Ultimately, having watched this for several decades, I'd say that all the city managers that I've known fundamentally do pay attention to the council, and they know how to count to five.
Yep.
Right? And the thing is that if they're not going to go off, you know, half cocked and start and pushing something or refusing to fund something, if in fact they don't even privately understand that the councillors are reasonably supportive of their position.
Well, I also mean for the folks at home who are really concerned that your city manager and your council and your government isn't super liberal and progressive, let me tell you as a conservative, they are the most liberal, progressive people I've ever met in my entire life. They're terrifying to me.
Right.
That should make you feel
better. Actually, if there's one distinction I would make between sort of the Bob Healy era and the Louis DiPasquale era is that Bob Healy was a person who knew how to say no a lot more directly than Louis. So Louis, I worry a little bit sometimes that our budgets will start growing and growing and growing because they'll say, we'll find a way to make it work. We'll find a way to make it work. And that's great in the short term. But in the long term, you can find yourself saddled with huge operating budgets.
Right.
And you have no choice but to do whatever it takes to drive up that revenue.
Yes, I know the council is reluctant to embrace this ideology, but I know that given the excessive value of land, excessive value of property, and that how much money exchanges hands in the city, there is a way to actually engage the private world in a meaningful and constructive way that they just don't really try to do that often. I'm really hoping that with this new council, we'll see maybe a little more willingness to do that. I don't know Jeevan at all. My guess is he's not really into that, but I know Patty at least listens. So I'm optimistic. I think Sumbul, I met with her last week to talk on a different subject, and I told her to the face, I said, you and I disagree on like 95% of everything, but I have a conversation with you. I don't feel as though you're trying to attack me or strip the land up from underneath me, and that there's a potential there.
I do worry a little bit about that, and that sort of gets into a lot of other topics too, which is that the drift, I sometimes refer to, are we going to have a confiscatory council? In other words, one which...
I don't know what that means.
Well, what it basically means is that if you own property or own business, they'll want to, so much, the hunger to get revenue or to restrict your rights as a private property owner, it'll be more easy for them to justify doing those sorts of restrictions.
It's been fascinating to me because I think of all the councils we've had, all of them have always said they're the friend of small businesses. And everything that any council has ever done in the city since I've been here, and probably before then, has absolutely hurt or decimated small businesses in the city.
You know, there's a...
It's a weird, like, we love you so much, we just want to squeeze you till you die.
And I hope I'm using the term correctly, but, the term freakonomics, I may be using it correctly, but if not, I'll make up my own word some of the time, right? It's this notion that...
We work only on beliefs now, so...
Right? Okay,
as long as you believe it, it's fine.
It's all faith-based civics now. It's this notion that if you try to address a problem, that the more you try to solve this problem, the worse the problem becomes.
Yeah.
And that sometimes it's true that the best way to solve the problem is to step back and and stop trying to solve the problem.
I think the same can be said for our housing issues in Cambridge.
Right.
Every housing policy change that's happened for the past couple of decades has only exacerbated the cost of development, the cost of construction, the cost of permitting, all the costs that trickle down to make housing much more and more expensive than it ought to be.
Right. I'll give three prime examples. One is one you just mentioned, which is that the more you try and help small businesses, by let's prescribe everything because we've decided what's going to be so helpful.
Well, it's because three people should have been complained so much that the council's like, screw it, let's just do what these people want us to do.
As opposed to just, could you just step back and let them just operate, kind of simple, really? Mm-hmm. So you try and help small businesses, but you end up hurting them.
Yeah.
The other thing is actually on the affordability of housing. The truth is, and again, this is a big conversation, but, when you provide even inclusionary zonings, which is a relatively benign thing. But the thing is that how do you pay for the inclusionary units? Well, you basically transfer the cost to the other parts of the building so that it becomes more unaffordable.
Yes.
So the price of affordability becomes unaffordability. Ultimately, I think, maybe I'm simple-minded about this, but the only way to really address housing affordability is just to have lots and lots of housing all over the place. you know, simple.
You said it, not me, man.
Right.
But that's the truth of it.
And then the other one actually is not so much having to do with city council, but school committee, which is the more they have tried to narrow the achievement gap, the wider it has grown.
Well, I'm not sure if it's a liberal tradition or part of progressive culture, or maybe it's just part of some ritual, but it seems to be that they find a direct correlation between how much money they spend on something and how much they want to fix it. Like if you look at the schools in general in Cambridge, we spend more per pupil than any other system. And if you dig deep dive into it, there's lots of different reasons why we do that. But you know, always I hear that we need to spend more, need to spend more. And I'm like, that's not going to fix the issues that you have.
That's right. Money isn't what solves these and problems.
And similar with development, like, you know, I was teaching a group of Harvard professors, hi, Suzanne, about just the notion of letting businesses fail. Letting a business come into Harvard Square or Central Square or wherever, and maybe you don't like that business. Maybe you find their product terrible, but the marketplace has to determine what works. And
right. You
have to let these people go in. And, you know, if a group like Ann Pizza wants to make the worst possible piece of pizza you've ever had, and in my opinion, they do, you have to let them fulfill that dream. And then ultimately it'll come crashing down and the market will find its place.
It's their dollar that gets lost.
Yeah.
Well, it's not yours.
It's their investment in the square.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so it's sort of a simple-minded answer to many of these things is, you know, if you really want to fix a problem, stop trying to fix it so
much. Well, you mentioned inclusionary, and I know we're going to run out, but like we had an inclusion ordinance that worked very well. And it was a reaction to the loss of rent control. We never lived in a universe where rent control and inclusionary work. That'll come back later on in the next segment, folks. But we took it to 20% from the 11.5% or 15% that we mathematically got down to 11.5%. And essentially, we broke it for no good reason.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if it's broken, but you know, time will tell, right?
I know it's broken. I've seen the results. You know,
will it just sort of like halt that type of scale housing development? We'll see.
Well, it's amazing because all the same people who were focusing on that wanted small scale development.
Yeah.
And what did that do? Killed small scale development.
All right. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back here, both of us, in a second.
But probably not my sweatshirt.
Right.